Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from The Grave Talks. Coming up in several weeks, we're going to be playing an awesome interview I just did with the grandson of Ed and Lorraine Warren, Christopher Edward McKinnell. In it, we talk about everything from Amityville to The Conjuring to Annabelle to what it was like, personal stories growing up as the grandson of one of the most famous paranormal investigative teams in history. It's a really intimate look at that life with that amazing family. You can, of course, wait to hear it when it comes out in June, or I can send it to you right now in its entirety, part one and part two. But here's what I need from you so I can send you that email with that download link to that full hour-long episode. We are looking for more listeners to our program. People finding out that we even exist is sometimes of quite a feat. Apple Podcasts is where a majority of downloads to podcasts occur. You may or may not be aware of that, but that is where a lot of people find the show to begin with. So what I need from you is a review, basically. Go to Apple Podcasts and leave The Grave Talks a review, and then send me a screenshot. Let me know that you left that review. Send it to Tony at realghoststoriesonline.com. And when you do that, I will reply back with a private link to that episode of the program months before it is released. You'll get the full thing, not just part one. You'll get part one and part two as a thank you. This is a limited offer. It's only going to stand till about the end of May of 2019. If you want in on getting this episode way in advance, just do that review. I think you're going to love this episode, and your help in this process of letting folks know that we exist is tremendously helpful. You see, when you leave that review, it helps other people know that we exist who are interested in the same topic. So it really does good for the whole community out there who are searching for shows like this, who are brand new to the world of podcasting. So please leave that review. Go to Apple Podcasts. That's where this is really going to count. Even if you are not an Apple member or you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can create an account and leave a review. Do that. Send me the screenshot. I will get you the episode. So take a minute, 2 minutes to get it done. And boom, you're going to get this episode, part one and part two, in its entirety, full hour-long interview for free as a thank you for that gesture of support. My email again, Tony at realghoststoriesonline.com. That's where you send the proof. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for the support. Now on with today's episode.
Today on The Grave Talks, the haunting of Jacinda Rearick. To say Jacinda Rearick has been through a lot is truly an understatement. While trying to recover from multiple surgeries over nearly a decade, she and her family have been tormented by dark entities that invaded their home seemingly out of nowhere. After asking multiple paranormal investigators, including a priest, to come help clear her dwelling of these unexplained and terrifying forces, Jacinda Rearick was essentially told that they could not be removed, that the family could only learn to deal with these dark spirits and keep them at bay. Much easier said than done. This is the story of a family under extreme oppression, as told by the woman who's living through it herself, Jacinda Rearick.
Basically, nothing really, I was really aware of nothing until... See, we've lived in this house now, it was 18 years this December. December of 2018 was 18 years that we've lived here. Mm-hmm. And there were no problems up until 2013. I raised my kids here, you know, my boys, they were young, we had no problems. And I went off to have a back surgery in 2013 in June. And I was just home here recovering, and I got my camera out, and I had like pictures for like 3 years on there, and I thought, okay, I'll start going through them. During that time frame, I lost my father in 2004, and I lost my mother in 2011. So I happened to come across my older son's graduation picture, and I always watched the ghost shows. I always was fascinated with it. And I happened to see him, his picture, and he stood up to the podium, and when he grabbed his diploma, there was an orb right over top of his head. And I nonchalantly said to my husband, you know what that is? That's probably my mom coming to watch him graduate. Didn't think anything of it. Nothing. And then I was literally here by myself, and my husband would come home and check on me at lunchtime. And I just started noticing them in more and more pictures. Then I'd be here during the day, and I'd be laying in bed, and I would hear voices, and I would hear noises, and my dogs would bark or growl, and I'm like, what's going on here? Like, I have to admit, I literally thought I was crazy at first.
Sure.
And this probably went on for a good year. And I kept telling everybody about it, and they're like, oh, well, you're just hearing creaks, and you're just hearing noises.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have been into now, that was June of 13. This would have been into October of 14. What had happened was my husband and I were in bed sleeping, and it was around 3 a.m., somewhere between 3 and 4 a.m., and something grabbed my arm and was literally trying to pull me out of bed. Like, my top part of my body was like hanging off the bed, and I was trying to yell for my husband to help me, and he wasn't answering me. So finally I screamed super loud, and when he flipped the light on, it let go. So that was that time. And then that next morning, like, that happened, we all tried to calm back down, and we laid back down, went to sleep. And when I actually got up that morning, I had the three claw marks on my side. So we took a picture of that. Then the next night at the very same time, I felt like these, they described them as tentacles. They were like these vines. There were these black vines that would come up from the bed. I would see them coming up from the bed, and they were wrapping around my legs, and I couldn't move. And I was trying to wake my husband up, and he literally rolled over to me, and I thought he was dead. He looked like this rotten corpse. I've never gotten that out of my mind. Like, that is as fresh as it happening last night. And then he woke up and he calmed me down, and I'm like, I don't care what any of you guys think, I have got to find somebody.
Sure.
So I just started researching in the area and come to find Kevin's group in Danville, which is literally 15 minutes from where I live. And I thought, oh good, they're close. So I called him, and they interviewed me on the phone, and I was like in hysterics because this had literally just happened the night before. And they were very quick. Like, they came, him and his, they weren't married at the time, but the psychic, Christine, came the very next day and interviewed me, and we talked. And then they were like, we need to do an investigation, and they were here within a week. And I'll never forget, my neighbor that lived across from me actually was living in my mom's trailer that was left to me. I rented it to her, and she was with me through all of this. And it turns out that she was, I think they said it's called, she has the gift of the third eye. Like, she would see dead people wandering around. Okay. So she would believe me all along. So I kind of had her come when they came for the interview. They were still here, and she came over to kind of help somebody to kind of back up, because she would come, and she always said that there was a black shadow guy standing, and he was always trying to like scare for her to leave, and she wouldn't leave, kind of a thing. So in the meantime, till they came back, my older son had to have shoulder surgery, and he was in a car accident, and he had happened to be here by himself. A friend had came and taken me away, and he is the only one. I never physically seen anything with my eyes but orbs. I never seen any of the apparitions, only in pictures, but the orbs I did see with my eyes. Justin had been coming from out of his bedroom, which happened to be in the basement, which the basement was a place that we resided. It was a full furnished family room. His bedroom was off to the side. We had a pool table down there and a bar, so like we hung out there all the time. Like, that's where we live. And he happened to be coming out of his bedroom. He came upstairs, and he heard, because he heard footsteps, and nobody was here. So he went back downstairs, and he heard the footsteps again, so he came back up, and then he heard the pool table balls break downstairs. And when he went down, he happened to look, and he seen this black, he described it as something that wasn't, or how did he say it? I said, I don't even know where you came up with that word, organically natural. And he said it flashed, and then it went away. And then he finally came to me. At that time, he had graduated from high school, and he was working at a local hardware store. And he had came to me, he's like, Mom, I finally believe you. And I was just like so happy that somebody was finally, you know, on the same page with me.
Up until that point, I want to ask a question, and you're doing a great job. Up until this point, you'd seen orbs, you had felt things, you had that experience in bed where it felt like vines, or did you actually see vines coming out?
No, there was like black. Okay. They looked like just vines, almost like that when Harry Potter was in that like tunnel thing, that maze. There were like these vines, and they were black, and they were just like intertwining all around my leg.
So aside from the orbs, you did see that. You did see these.
I did see the black vines.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're having all these things happen, and you're expressing this to your husband and your sons, what sort of reactions are you getting? What are they saying to you?
Before Justin actually had that experience, they just literally thought it was my medications because I was on some heavy duty meds from the back surgery.
Sure.
And I kept saying, honestly, I'm telling you guys. And then like at night, my husband and I would be laying back in bed watching TV. And I'm not going to lie, I got so addicted to wanting to find out what was here. I kept my camera underneath my pillow. That is no lie. And like, every noise or everything I heard, I was constantly snapping pictures or I was taking videos because I was just trying to find something to back up what I was saying.
Sure.
And without them
experiencing something for themselves firsthand and them thinking, well, you know, she's on a lot of medication right now because of the surgery. Did you ever go in and ask your doctors or anything and say, look, this is what I'm experiencing? I'm just curious, did they ever give you any feedback or did they, you know, essentially get on the side of your husband or your son? Or did that conversation ever happen?
I have never to this day mentioned it to any of my doctors.
Okay.
No, and none of them have ever mentioned it to me either.
Sure.
Never. I never said a word because I was afraid to. I didn't want them to think I was nuts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my husband, throughout this whole thing, he was a drinker and it kept escalating so badly that we've been together 31 years. We've been married and we've been together since eighth grade in high school. So we've been together a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I was about ready to be done because I'm in here trying to recover from surgery and he's out in the garage drinking with his buddies. I mean, it got really bad where he was just drinking all the time.
Yeah.
And it was affecting him that way. When they said alienating, it was trying to keep everybody away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And keep me alone. And so that happened to Justin. And I was so glad that that happened because I honestly, at one point, thought I was crazy. And then one day I thought, you know what? No, I'm getting myself up out of bed. I came out in the dining room and I was painting and I was drawing. I came out here. I started playing like Christmas music because we were getting close to the holidays. I had all the lights on in the house all the time. And my son at that point then would call me from work and check on me because he was afraid for me to be here by myself, but there was no choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have pictures, like in the beginning, I did get some pictures developed and that's what was submitted to the TV show. And I do have them if you would ever want to see them. Like I never knew that you should not have mirrors across from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we would a lot of times get reflections and I have some pretty funky things in mirrors, like coming out of mirrors that would, they look like things from Jurassic Park almost.
Wow.
And that's where I had taken and to like the drugstore, put my thing and I had them blowed up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a series of, I think, 10, maybe 5 to 10 pictures where you could actually see this black shadowy thing coming in my our bedroom and it would come in. And come in, and then you can see it back. And I took slide for slide because they told me if I'm taking pictures, you have to take them in sequence, at least 3 at a time. So, I mean, I was getting like really like, okay, I've got to find some proof. And my dad had passed away, like I said, in 2004. And I had the feeling all along that my parents were here. Mm-hmm. I just had that feeling. And in the one orb in particular was a man's face with glasses. And I said, that's my dad. And every single person I showed it to, they knew my father, said, oh my God, that's your father. That was like one of the things that blew me away.
Yeah.
And when they came to do the initial investigation, there must have been at least 15 of them. And they kept me at the dining room table with the lead psychic, Christine. And then they had every room in our house, they had an investigator and a psychic, if you will. And then they also had somebody that would be taking pictures. Well, they had trouble getting their equipment to work. They finally got it to work, but they had trouble. And they had to come back 3 times initially before they got it to, like, go away. But then they had to come back. I think they came a total of 6 times. And then they had told me that I had what was called a maintenance house where they would have to come, like, 3 times a year and just kind of go through and do a cleansing. But that never happened, because then in May of 2015, my husband had a car accident and he ended up with a traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't come because they said with his closed head injury, they wouldn't subject their group if he would have any episodes, which he never did.
Sure.
So that was kind of the reasoning for stopping to, like, help.
Okay.
Per se. And then from 2015 up until Melissa and I were just talking, we were trying to get our date straight. It was like August or September of 2016 was the first that I ever actually had anybody else come in.
So when you had that period of, okay, we're going to do a maintenance on this and try and keep things at bay, while it was actively going on, while they were trying to keep it at bay, was it working? Was it calming things down?
Yeah, every time they would come, like, and after they came that first time, there was what I want to say is there was this little boy that kept coming around, and for some reason it always hung around me, and I never seen it, but when she would come, she would always say that he looked at the devil. So I don't know how many times they had, for every time they came, like, they did another cleansing to get something away. So after that, I got so desperate, I actually had somebody come that goes to Lancaster and does the ghost tours. And they did a lot of research for me and found out that this particular land, it was Native American way, 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 way back. And there was a well on our property that in 2012, before any of this started, my husband had opened that we used for our swimming pool. So they told us that we had released it then when we opened the well. And then when I had my surgery is when it died. Like, it actually attached to me and came in. And then it started to go strength. So, see, I've never been completely clear on how it started.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told different things. And then I was told that it attached to me and came home to me with the hospital. So I, to this day, really don't even know what the reason was it started. I just know we lived here for 12 to 13 years and had nothing.
Until those times, until the well was opened, until you had your surgery. Well, it's interesting to hear that those two events, you know, somewhat coincide with one another. It's not uncommon by any means, having heard tens of thousands of ghost encounter stories over the years. Very commonly, someone that goes through a traumatic incident, whether it be an accident, whether it be an illness, what have you, that kind of puts you, for lack of a better term, a little bit closer to the other side potentially, mm-hmm. but you survive it and you move forward. That does seem to be an area where doors are opened and things begin to happen. I'm wondering if the two, you know, back to back had something to, you know, really kind of played on each other. Like, something was opened with that well. You were more vulnerable because of the state that you were in. Your husband was a bit vulnerable of the state he was in. And some of that was, you know, essentially taken advantage of by something on the other side.
It gets even better. My health has continued to, now granted, before I had that first back surgery, I was completely healthy.
Hey.
I was working 65 hours a week at a veterinary office. So I was, you know, busy.
Yeah.
And I was working. I have now, just March of last year, had my 6th back surgery.
And that's, you know, that's a common thing for these things to amp up the more and more someone is going through,
yep.
through medical issues.
And the last back surgery, most of my surgeries have been lumbar.
Mm-hmm.
The last back surgery I had was thoracic, which all of my doctors are baffled on how I even got it, because they said this kind of surgery that they did is rare, number one. And number two, in order to kind of have it, you normally have to be born with it or have some kind of trauma. And I had, of course, I wasn't born with it. And I haven't had a trauma because I've been home recovering from surgeries. Like, I have had at least from 2012, because I had a laminectomy prior to my first fusion. So I have had 6 back surgeries. I had a hysterectomy. I had 2 breast masses removed and a spinal cord stimulator implanted. So, like, it was like I was just bombarded. So there were at least 2 years in a row where I had 2 surgeries up, like, in a year, like 6 months apart. So I have not been able to catch a break. Like, I'm constantly having, and they've all been major surgeries where I'm talking 8 to 12 hours under, you know, under anesthesia. And right about the time I contacted Melissa, like, because she's 3 hours from me, so she couldn't get to me right away. I would walk for my therapy. And this one day I just walked into a Catholic church. I'm not Catholic. I did not know this Catholic priest. And I sat down and told him my story. He came to the house and walked through. He went down to the basement where everybody, the basement now we no longer, we don't reside, like, we don't go down there. My husband and I are actually here alone now. And we turned it into a playroom for counselors because Melissa told us to try to take it back. But what I was going to say was, I walked in and this priest came. He walked through the whole house. He met Todd. We went downstairs and we went outside and he kind of shook his head or like trying to like shake something off. And he said, we definitely need to come back and do a cleansing. So he came back like maybe 4 days later and he actually did a cleansing downstairs in front of this room where this thing is supposed to leave. He did this whole ritual with Todd and I, then he went through the whole house. And his exact words to me were, I have protected you and your family, but this thing that's in your basement is never going to leave, is what he told me. He came 2 or 3 times after that. Melissa actually, when they actually came back to do the investigation, I actually took her there and she actually went and spoke with him. And then before, I wanted to mention something, before I had this last surgery, it was going to be a major one where they had to collapse both of my lungs and it was like pretty major. I was really scared because of what was going on. Apparently what tear sometimes goes with me, they said it attaches to me and goes with me. And I was afraid, like, here I'm going to have this major surgery. Am I going to die? Mm-hmm. So he anointed me with oil 2 before my surgery. Did you ever hear of stigmata?
Mm-hmm.
I had that. This last surgery, I was in the hospital over Easter. And the day after my surgery, my daughter-in-law and my family were there, and she went in the bathroom with me to help me change. And I looked at my palms and I had these 2 perfect purple bruises. And I said to her, what in God's name did these be from? And she's like, I don't know. So I asked my nurses and they didn't know. I didn't know what it was. Yeah. And it just was there. Easter, I was in till the Tuesday after Easter. I was in 6 days. The day after Easter, they were gone. Like, they were never there. They were never sore. They didn't feel like bruises. So I came home and he had come to see me, and I told him, and he just got this look on his face. He's like, wow, that is so rare. That doesn't happen often. It only happens around Easter, and you were blessed from God. After I had that surgery, I was to have chest tubes and be in ICU. I never had to have chest tubes, and I did not have to be in ICU.
What were your doctors saying at that point? Obviously, from what you said, you've never told a doctor about any of the backstory of what was going on. Were they just amazed, or did they have any insight?
They're actually amazed because I'm 10 months out from the surgery, and they said I'm doing probably 80% better than what most people. Like, it takes you, usually a normal person, a 4-year to recover, but because I've had so many surgeries back to back, they said it would take me 2.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm doing fairly well. I'm actually still having a lot of issues with my hips and stuff, but for the most part, you know, I'm always going to have good and bad days, but they just said I'm doing better than most people that would have had the kind of surgery I had and the history that I had prior to that.
Sure.
And I do attribute that to him doing that. And then He came to see me twice at my house afterwards, and both times he would anoint me with oil.
When we talked about earlier, you had mentioned you thought your parents might be there. In terms of the orbs that you were seeing, it sounds like there's very likely a lot more going on there than just a haunting of a loved one or a loved mm-hmm. one watching over. Let's talk about that a little bit. What exactly do you think? What have some of the investigators told you? What has the priest told you in greater detail of who's all occupying your home beyond just you guys, the living?
Okay. So, as far as the initial investigation, this is what I was told. I was told that the investigator and the group that was down in the basement, after not even 15 minutes, the guy came upstairs and he looked like white as a ghost. And he said, "We have a very strong," at that time he didn't say demon, he said, I think he said entity, I'm trying to remember, in the basement. And he said, "We literally have a battle of good and evil going on." He said, "There is a male figure down there and he's fighting for her." And I right away said, "My dad." They would not admit that it was my father until later on when I showed them my dad's picture and I said, "Please tell me if that's who you've seen." And then they told me that's who it was. But they literally told me that if my parents were not here fighting for me, that I would have either been dead, killed, or possessed, mm-hmm. is exactly what Kevin told me. I feel that my parents are still here, but nobody has really said anything to me since then. Like, Melissa hasn't said anything, and neither did the priest. He didn't say anything about who was here. He just said he called the thing in my basement the thing. The only other person that I ever got opinions from was my nephew, who he used to be in Kevin's group when he was a lot younger. And he can sense things. And every time he comes here, he would either have to go outside because he couldn't breathe or something like that. Well, the day that Melissa and them were coming, Josh, my nephew, actually came to meet her. And they were running late because of them coming so far away. He never got to meet with her, but they talked. And that time when he was here, he opened the doors of the room where it's supposed to be, and he looked in and he said, "Aunt Sin, it's right in there. It's still trying to persuade itself as a little boy." He said, "It's not a little boy. It's a big, big, strong thing." So he could see it. He actually tried to contact Kevin for me, but they just would never come back again. They were fearful of my husband, which I don't know why. And truthfully, nobody can understand why it hasn't gone to him with the brain injury. It's just me. Like, it still is focused on me. Mm-hmm. They say it's probably because I'm still the one that takes care of everything. Even though, you know, I'm having my issues, I still pretty much am. You know, I have to take care of all the medical stuff, all the bills, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But lately, I had to call Melissa twice because what has happened, there really hasn't been any physical attacks, but I've had lots of time where I don't sleep well at all at night. And I'd be at my kitchen sink doing dishes, and the next thing I know, I'd be standing at the top of my basement, ready to take a step. And then I snap out of it, and I don't know how I got from A to B. And when that happened, then Melissa and them came back, and they actually did a full cleansing that time.
When they come in and do the cleansings after you have a situation like that, where you have mm-hmm. this lapse of time, do you notice that those situations become less frequent?
They do. Everything settles down for maybe, I don't know, a couple months, and then it starts right back up again. So, in my honest opinion, I don't know if the original one was here or has come back, but I don't think, truthfully, that we've ever been with not something. I think it's hit a lot. Mm-hmm. I always knew that it was there. One thing that I just can't train the phone on what I was going to say. Oh, darn it. Maybe it'll come back. Oh, I did. There was somebody that I talked to, and I don't know if you've ever heard of him. His name is Rusty Pizzazza. He has some Angel Light radio talk show. Have you ever heard of him?
I have not.
He's from Indiana. And he's a, he wants something like a light, it has to do with light, like a light healer or something like that.
Okay.
And somebody referred me to him, so I talked to him on the phone, and that this was just, I don't know, maybe a couple months ago. And by him and I talking on the phone while we were talking, he, this is what he told me. He told me that right now, currently, that I have four, and this is exactly what he said, you have four demons there. And he said, somebody needs to come and reset your land. He said, the land has to be back to reset, and once that is done, we can clear your house. But he's in Indiana, and he can't come. And I tried to get him and Melissa to communicate, but they could never get, you know, they could never hook up. So then I haven't talked to him since then. And I'm like, oh, that's great. You tell somebody that they have all this, and then you just kind of fall off the wayside. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sure. You get, you know? You get what you think may be an answer, and it, it, you can't really do much with it. And that, that's hard to know, because obviously, you know, you have a lot of people that come into the house that are going to tell you what they think. And, you know, it's hard to know. Well, I'm sure. And I'm not dismissing that they have the best of intentions, but it is hard to know when you have four or five different people that come in and say, here's what it is, you know, which one is correct? You know, are they all, you know, a degree of correct, you know, or is, you know, with something like this, something that is that dark, something that seems to really thrive on harming someone, I think it's very hard to identify, no matter who you are, no matter what sense you have, no matter what psychic abilities or sensitivities or empathic abilities you have. Some of these things, I think, are so dark that they, you know, they can fool them too. They can, I think, easily make them think that it's four of them, if you know, or that it maybe it is four of them.
Yep.
But the fact that it can manifest in different ways and make you think it's a kid, you know, that's what I was going to get to earlier. Was I'm wondering, you know, are there truly multiple things in this house? I mean, I would think it seems that they're good and evil is probably a battle going on with your parents. But I'm wondering if the darkness, the real weird stuff where it's looking like a kid, it's looking like the vines, maybe that's just one thing that's taking different forms of whatever is going to incite the most fear and the most damage that it can when it's able to do so.
Mm-hmm. And see, the only difference is now is I've become stronger. I'm not afraid of it anymore, but before I was afraid, and it knows it. So I don't get like the actual attacks, you know what I mean? Like now, if I feel something, I just turn around and tell it it's not welcome and it needs to go away.
That concludes part one of our interview with Jacinda Rarick. In part two, does the dark entity respond when it is commanded to stop? What experiences have the neighbors had in their homes? Does the uncovered well have anything to do with the haunting in the greater area? How has Jacinda attempted to leave the home? Does anything seem to make the activity increase? And why have all the trees in their yard died? And has there been a reliable way to make the activity stop or even slow down? We'll continue our conversation. To hear the rest, become a gravekeeper at patreon.com/thegravetalks, or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Gravekeeper. For $5 a month, you'll have access to every single part two of our interviews, as well as access to advanced episodes of our program months before they are released to the public. And like I said, access to all of our part two interviews to every single episode. It's the way that we support this program and keep it on the air. If you're enjoying it, please consider signing up, patreon.com/thegravetalks, or go to our website, The Grave Talks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.